Wir waren jetzt ganz im Westen von Österreich unterwegs und wir bewegen uns jetzt noch sehr viel weiter in den Westen, nämlich in die USA, nach New York City. Und ich freue mich ganz besonders, und es ist uns auch eine große Ehre, dass sie zu uns gekommen ist. Sarah Goodman ist heute bei uns. Sarah Goodman ist eine Direktorin von Baltic Street und sie ist bei Baltic Street verantwortlich für die Fortbildung und das Training neu einsteigender Mitarbeiterinnen. Sie hat in vielen Ausbildungen, Lehrgängen Peers ausgebildet. Ich würde meinen, sie ist eine Pionierin der Peer-Bewegung in den USA. Und sie ist in den letzten Jahren auch als Mentorin für Peers an der Columbia University of New York City tätig. Sie hat die Organisation Baltic Street mit aufgebaut. Das ist eine wirklich beeindruckende Organisation. Es ist die größte von Peers geführte Organisation in New York. Wurde 1996 gegründet und beschäftigt mittlerweile über 100 Mitarbeiterinnen, von denen 90% über Psychiatrieerfahrung verfügen. Und bietet ein sehr, sehr breites Dienstleistungsspektrum an. Und Sarah Goodman wird uns jetzt darüber erzählen. Vielen Dank, dass du zu uns gekommen bist. No problem.
I need my sunglasses. Good afternoon. Thank you, Locke, for including me. Thank you, Christian Moritz, for making all the arrangements. Thank you, Rokas Lupik, for hooking me up. Okay. I created a presentation that describes the agency that I work for, that I help to shape. And after listening to everybody this morning, I'm throwing it away because it's boring. It's very actual, factual. Baltic Street was founded in the early 90s based on a proposal from 8 psychiatric nurses who appreciated that there was no continuity of care when people were discharged from the hospital. And the funding for the project at that point was city funds. And they told us how many people we had to see, and they told us how many employees we could have, but they couldn't tell us what to do because they had no idea what peers were about. So we showed them. Now, over the years, originally what we landed up doing was being we did the tasks that the social workers either didn't want to do or didn't have time to do. We helped people get benefits, we helped them get housing, we did escorts if they were getting evicted, but nobody was really charged with what we then at that point called recovery. So you could be as dysfunctional as you wanted to be and learn how to help people apply and fill out these forms. And our funding kept on getting renewed, which was very nice because it gave people some money in their pockets, literally minimum wage. And at one point in 2004, the whole middle management left. I left. My boss left, we were 13 programs, all the middle management left because we weren't doing anything to help people move forward. We were just picking up the slack for the social workers. From the day that I left the agency, because of the mission, I made a pledge to myself that if ever there was a chance to come back, under different energy, I would stop what I was doing and come back. And that happened in 2010. I had some very interesting experiences between 2004 and 2010. But I came back, and the guy that had been my boss, who is now the CEO, his name is Isaac Brown, a person diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, came back as the executive director, and he made me his second in command, and we turned the place over. We had had discussions on recovery. What is it? How is it? How do you do it? One size fits all. Recovery was a word that we'd hijacked from the substance use community. And they understood that word as being clean and sober, which did not necessarily increase people's ability to get jobs and maintain relationships and move forward. And then one day we had a training on, from the State Office of Mental Health, on illness self-management. I don't want to manage my illness. I'm not ill. I don't have fever. I'm not puking. My stomach is fine. The fact that I earned three separate diagnoses by the time I was 40 was based on my interaction with life. It was based on the doctor that I saw on a day that I was very disrupted, that smacked another label on me. It's very subjective. I don't do well on medication because I don't remember to take it. One of my diagnoses is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And then when I started to learn about medication and all of the side effects, the potential side effects, I had a young lady that I was helping to train who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. She went because she was feeling stressed. She had issues. And she gets smacked with a diagnosis. And she gets put on a regime of medication. And after the words bipolar, everything the doctor said was wah, 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 wah. So she didn't absorb. You got to get your blood tested. You got to maintain levels. And within a year and a half, she was in kidney failure. And that to me is not acceptable. I'd rather deal with my issues than have to deal with physical ramifications of taking medication. We changed the agency in 2010. We brought in tools from both the business world and the mental health world. We brought in the Wellness Recovery Action Plan. We brought in the eight dimensions of wellness. We joined the trauma-informed community. Because if you look at the statistics, I'm not going to quote a figure lest somebody dispute it, but over 80% of people diagnosed with serious mental illness are actually reacting to trauma. And there is no medication for trauma. So again, we shifted gears and we became an agency that is known now for the practice of wellness. illness, you want to go to your doc, go to your doc. Medication works for you, take medication. I'm not going to tell you not to take it. For some people, it saves their lives. Again, our CEO, diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, gets a shot once a month of Haldol and runs an $8 million agency. I'm not going to argue with that. Some discussion this morning was also about how do you hire peers? And I do most of the hiring for the agency. And I do it based on energy. I do it based on a conversation about how do you practice wellness? What are the good things going on for you? And if that translates into enthusiasm, I know that that person is going to be able to have an impact on the people that I serve. The beauty is that we are a peer-run agency. And in my position, I was able to charge everyone with their own wellness. Howard, it's part of our supervision. How are you? What are your goals for yourself? If you're enthused about something, it will show when you come to work. If you have a hobby that excites you, if you're working on a degree, even if you're working just on getting your driver's license, people will feel that growth, and it's contagious. Enthusiasm is contagious. Just to scroll back for a minute, I had a 25-year corporate history when I joined this agency in 2000. I made a lot of money. I was privileged to be part of the crew that took paper systems and translated them into computers back in the 70s. And I loved it. Systems analysis to get you to understand what I need from you so that I can understand what you need from me. It was wonderful. But I had no emotional regulation whatsoever. I knew I could feel sadness, I could feel rage. I didn't know what it was to smile from the inside out, ever. I mean, my childhood was massively traumatic. But I was told to suck it up or take medication and then I won't give a damn that my life stinks. And then I found this recovery stuff. And I've never looked back. Impacting people's lives. Peer work is mutual. If you're not getting something out of it, you're not doing it right. If you're guiding a person's process, if you're helping to tease out of them who they want to be, what they want to do, where they want to live, and they take some of the steps together with you, how do you not feel on top of the world? So the fact that most of the people that work for us make minimum wage, they're rich in other ways. And it's taken people, okay, I can go on and on about that, but one of the programs that we are blessed with, when I came back to the agency, my boss and I had spent years driving together to work, and he's an artist, and I have certification in expressive arts therapy. What would a place look like? You take your meds, you go to your groups, you see your doc, get hospitalized once in a while. But what would a place look like after you do all of that? Because people are isolated, they're islands, their families don't want to deal with them. How do they have, what kind of friends are you making if you're constantly psychiatrically disrupted? The energy is only going to attract the same kind of energy. Who would you be if finances, education, and your mental stability was not in the way? Oh, I wanted to be a rocket scientist. I work with, I was training assertive community treatment teams. And I asked them, so what would you do if Johnny said to you he wants to be a rocket scientist? And their response was, he's delusional. He needs to, you know, get a grip on reality and he needs to, excuse me. What if we take Johnny by the hand and we sit down at the computer and we see what educational requirements there are to being a rocket scientist? You need a doctorate in quantum physics. I don't know. Do you have one? No. Okay, put it on the list. You need a master's of science. Do you have one? No. Put it on the list. You need a bachelor's of art. Do you have one? No, put it on the list. You need a high school diploma. Do you have one? No. That's where we're gonna start. And then after he sees that he needs 16 years of education to be a rocket scientist, he may rethink where he wants to go. He hasn't changed that dream since he's 4 years old. The miracles that we've seen, people going from sleeping under the highway to shelters, to, oh no, I don't want to live in a shelter. I want to have a place to put my own. Okay, what steps do we have to take? What do you need to master in order to fulfill that dream? And that's what we work on, step by step by step. It's not one size fits all on any level. Because whether Joe wants an apartment or John wants an apartment, there may be different obstacles in front of each of them. We are private investigators. We are cheerleaders. We are mentors, and most of all, we believe in people. And having somebody believe that you can do this, instead of, oh no, you're never going to make anything out of yourself, look at you, you don't even have a GED, you're still living in your mother's basement. How does that motivate somebody to move forward? But when you have somebody that will celebrate those tiny little steps. I brushed my teeth today. Well, good for you. I remembered where my Metro card was. Good for you. People don't have people to celebrate them. And again, the miracles that we've seen, people going from the depths of despair, I thought I would never work again. When I crashed out of corporate America, I thought I would never work again. I picked up a bottle of vodka and I stayed drunk for the next 4 years because I was like, I have no purpose. Nobody has an appreciation of me. I've got nothing to show for my 40 years in the world. Now my mother thought I was a psychiatrist. That's okay, I didn't change her mind. We practice what we teach. We have to, where people first. Everybody's got issues. Life is a struggle. Some of us struggle more than others. Nobody is immune. Any dare but for the grace at any moment, any one of us in this room can go splat, as was demonstrated this morning. You don't know, and those people sometimes even go splat even harder, because you're just living your life, something happens, and it's traumatic, and there is no way out, and you just sink into that malaise. And it can suck on you, and it can take you down. And no medication in the world is going to bring you back from that. It has to be interpersonal interaction. It has to be somebody that can believe that you can make those steps forward and hold your hand at every step of the way. I interrupted myself. I'm good at that. We were blessed that the State Office of Mental Health, which does not have the same rigors as the city funding, trusted Isaac and myself to create a community resource and wellness center. It's 3,200 square feet of music recording equipment, of every kind of art that you could imagine. We have pastels, we have watercolors, we have acrylics, we have oils. We do line dancing. Right now, they just kicked off a yoga program yesterday. These are things that people who are of limited means can access now and see, yeah, that's something I need in my life. So yes, there becomes a dependence on the center, but people also gain strength, and then they go out and get jobs, and then they can afford the yoga. And it is amazing. People come back to share their experiences. I came to the center when I was broken, and I was diagnosed with HIV, and I had Hep C, and I had no money, and my dog was sick, and my daughter didn't want to talk to me. That now have a basis, a foundation for a decent life, that have reunited with their families, that have dealt with their physical ailments. Because physical ailments, same as psychiatric, can be very scary. I don't want to deal with it. Leave me alone. I said no. And that can lead to even further disaster. So we get people through this practice of wellness to become very proactive about their health, about the state of their teeth, about even what they're doing to their hair, how they exercise, all the little things that a lot of us take for granted. People need to be directed in, and they get so excited to master something new. One of the topics that is very substantial in the agency is personal responsibility. It may not be your fault, all the trauma, all the neglect, all of the disruption in your life. It's your responsibility, though, to figure out how to move forward through this. And again, Johnny wanted to be a rocket scientist. He never became a rocket scientist, but he created baby goals along the way that he met, that excited him and got him engaged in life and volunteered in places where he met people that had no idea he had a diagnosis because he was excited to be there. It never ceases to amaze me. And again, The beauty is that we're all peers. So I can tell people, you got to practice what you teach. On the other hand, I can't afford to pay people a lot because we're government funded. So people have to do it from their heart. And those are the ones that stick around. It used to be one of the questions I would ask annually at our mandatory training was, how many people in the room are consumers with jobs? Everybody raised their hand because it fit. And then I asked them, okay, how many people in the room are peers with careers? And that was a game changer, because people realized that there is a career path here. Annually, we do a one-day conference called New York City Working Peers Conference. And it's meant to showcase all of the ladders that people can climb, all of the avenues of training without going for a conventional degree, which some people do pursue. But how to use your lived experience to help people enhance the quality of their lives. The agency runs anywhere between 14 and 17 programs. We have 87 beds of supported housing. We have supported education. We have a geriatric program. We have 3 advocacy programs. We have a couple of self-help programs. And the beauty is that we can refer. You need housing? You're at my advocacy program? I can refer you over to the housing program. You need your GED? I'll refer you over to the supported ed program. And many of the people that even get referred out started at the Community Resource and Wellness Center. And the most beautiful thing about the center is that it's open to the community, which helps, to use a word I don't like, normalize things. I've got people with their PhDs sitting next to somebody that doesn't even have their GED, but because they have the common ground of the pain of trauma, they can write poetry together. And it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing to watch people's souls and spirits get hydrated again and get engaged and curious about life. We have a literacy group for people that maybe don't read so well or don't write so well. That puts them at a supreme disadvantage. But we don't pathologize anything. We don't stigmatize anything. If this is what you need, this is when the group runs. And if you want private lessons, we'll talk about it later. If you're too shy or too embarrassed to put yourself out there like that. We have a philosophy group. We have a greenhouse. We have I was trained by Howie the Harp, Peer Advocacy Center. And we do hire Howie the Harp graduates. And the trainers at Howie the Harp do mention Baltic Street often as a peer-run agency. And a lot of them, I worked there for 5 years, so they still know me. And last year, a young man was trained and made it his goal to work for Baltic Street. And he came up with this thing called Brain Food Garden. And it's all about nourishing your body to support your brain. So now I have a greenhouse in my community center. No complaints. That last week they named the Venus flytraps. We celebrate the holidays together once a month. We get together and celebrate the birthdays for that month. Somebody was saying about steaks earlier. What if everybody wants steak? And I chuckled to myself because we have to keep things on a level ground. If I'm going to give you an orange, I'm going to have an orange for you in case you want it. So steak, it's a little costly. But it's not one size fits all on any level. It's about the personal relationships that people create with the 7 staff that we have. We have a lot of different kinds of people represented, so that the energy will attract. We have male, we have female, we have in between, and somewhere there's going to be somebody that you want to talk to. We get referrals from therapists based on the reaction of their other clients. Would you take this client on? Send them over. No pressure. They like us. They like what we've got to offer. Fine. We welcome everybody. And again, one of the things that to me is the most important thing is to have somebody believe in you. If you don't have somebody, if nobody believes in you, what's the point? And again, so many people are alienated from their families and don't have healthy friendships because of circumstance. And we do have a knack for helping people understand that, yes, I believe you can do this with support, and I'm here to support you every step of the way. You want me to back off? I'll back off. You want to try? There's a doc by the name of Patricia Deegan, who herself has a diagnosis, and one day said, you know what, no, I'm going to become a doctor, and I'm not letting this happen to anybody else. But one of my favorite lines of hers, the dignity of risk and the right to fail. And so often, we are so caught up as parents, as friends, as mental health professionals in making sure that people don't fail, that we don't allow them to try. And in being allowed to try, you see, oh, well, that didn't work. How do I need to tweak it? And we'll sit down and we'll unpack that rather than, oh, no, I can't never do that. I'm not even going to try. And that's where people come to us. Through that lens of, well, I tried everything. Okay, let's figure out why it didn't work. Failure, you only fail when you give up. If you keep on trying, that's not failure. Can I be finished?
No.